Episode number 297, You Deserve to Know, with Paul Wingfield. Part 1. Let's do it.
This is the definitive podcast for helping you plan, create, and execute dynamic worship experiences at your church. Useful, practical content in the areas of production, worship, communications, first impressions, and more. This is Making Sunday Happen.
But hey guys, welcome to Making Sunday Happen, the podcast for those who plan, create, and execute weekend worship experiences at churches all over the world. The last 2 weeks on the show, I've told you about our brand new kids ministry called 1230 Kids. 1230kids.com is the website. It's packed with an entire library of ready-made media for kids pastors. I'm talking about countdowns, mini movies, games, full kids series boxes, service packs, which is a packs of coordinated media for holidays and other events, social media graphics, and more. Your children's pastor can purchase media individually or through our Go Unlimited subscription plan. Plans as low as $33 a month. So just think, for under $400 a year, every media component in your kids' ministry is taken care of. Okay, all of it. From series to countdowns to games to all of it, under $400 a year. Okay, it's awesome. An entire site dedicated to your kids, pastors, and leaders. We're offering ready-made media for kids, also custom media. We do work for folks like Awana, folks like Doorpost Songs, Yancey, Answers in Genesis, Seeds Family Worship, Kids Matter, and more. We do custom media work for all of those guys. Go Curriculum. All that is coming from our team. We create media for those folks. And so if you run a kids ministry, if you would like custom media for your kids ministry at your church, feel free to reach out. So ready-made, custom, and training, free training for your kids, pastors, and leaders. We're just getting started. Feel free to share this with your kids pastor. We have a whole section on the website that's all free media so that you can test us out and see what it's like, see how to use our content in your kids' worship. We would love for you to check us out. Again, 1230-1230, 1230kids.com, 1230kids.com. All right, this week on the podcast, I welcome my friend Paul Wingfield. Paul is the senior pastor at White Flag Christian Church in St. Louis. Now, Paul took a 3-month sabbatical last year during the craziness, and he came back fired up. He did a sermon series when he came back called You Deserve to Know, where he laid out where his church and their leadership stood on cultural issues of the day. So fair warning, we're going political today, and we're going to be talking about some cultural issues of our day. It's going to lean conservative, it's going to lean biblical, and Paul is going to talk through what he discussed with his church and where this church stood on some major cultural and political issues of the day. All right? So those sermons alone, Paul's sermons, have been watched over 40,000 times. He did 2 sermons on this topic, on this series, and those sermons have been watched over 40,000 times from folks all over the world. Obviously, it's hitting a nerve. It's made an impact, and that's how impactful this message was. So Paul is going to share all about that and more this week and next week on the show, and we'll dive right into my interview with Paul Wingfield right after this. Check this out.
Spark is the event that I wish had been around when I first started podcasting.
Spark is a Christian podcast conference
created by Christians for Christians to really drive home what God's put on your heart to share with the public.
So when I started podcasting, I was the only podcaster that I knew. And so like it was like crazy to like try to figure out all this stuff from scratch.
I didn't have a podcast. I didn't know even where to start.
Until I came to this conference, I had no idea how to do a podcast.
But at Spark, I can see other people coming here and they're starting at the same point that I was, but now they have community, which was what I was lacking. And they're able to ask them questions like right now and find out answers to things and avoid these massive pitfalls that I wish that I had avoided.
But if you've actually done podcasting before,
you have got the industry top-notch speakers here that can go deep into the things that you need to know about.
So one of the things I love about the podcast is the fact it's specifically for Christian podcasters, which is a huge part of the podcasting industry, but has really just been underserved by the resources that are out there. I think there's a really unique angle there that I don't know any other podcast conference is offering.
There is such a buzz in the room. When I came here, I was just so amazed at how many people are cheering you on.
The community of people here, they're knowledgeable, they're on point, and they just deliver everything that you need in small, easy, bite-sized forms.
It's global people from all over the country, all over the world. It's the most concentrated conference I've ever been to that had the best return on its value.
Iron sharpens iron, and it takes just a catalyst, and that's what a spark is. A spark is a catalyst. It'll bring your little fire, or if you don't have a fire, you'll get a fire, and you'll want to spread it with others.
That's what we're all looking for, is that spark that either gets us to start the podcast, or that spark that maybe was there when we started and just needs to be renewed to persevere and keep going.
When you come to the Spark Conference, you're going to walk away with community, with information about how to podcast, and with vision for the stories that you're going to tell.
Hey guys, that was a commercial for the Spark Podcast Conference that is happening inside the NRB 2021 Christian Media Convention and Expo in Grapevine, Texas on June 22nd through 24th. If you want to turn your worship experience into a podcast, if you are a pastor that has a podcast or thinking about starting one, this is a great conference for you to attend. The conference features an incredible lineup of speakers, podcast hosts, and other industry leaders. It's all the tools that you need to create a successful podcast. The Spark Media Conference, Spark Media Podcast Conference. You can register today at sparkmedia.ventures. That's the website, sparkmedia.ventures. Hey guys, today I welcome the senior pastor of White Flag Christian Church in St. Louis, my friend Paul Wingfield. Paul, what's going on, man?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Awesome. Love the beard. Love the hat. You're just bringing it today, baby.
Well, this is pretty much my look every day.
Nice. Now, you and I go way back, and I would love to just kind of talk to this for a second. So I started 1230 about 6 years ago now. I was on staff at New Spring Church, and I was transitioning off of staff and into 1230 full time, and just kind of trying to gain momentum. And so I had several churches that I would do work for, and then some ministries came along, and then it kind of steamrolled from there. And so it went from me to now a full team of us. But you were one of those kind of first church clients. And so for better or worse, you've helped us grow. So thank you, man. I appreciate that. And appreciate just all the partnership that we've had over the last few years.
Absolutely. Well, you guys have been incredibly helpful to our church, and it certainly have had an impact on how effective we are in terms of our media and graphic input to the services.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, thank you. Tell me, so White Flag. Now, tell me how you came to White Flag and a little kind of a brief history of your involvement.
Sure. Yeah. So I came to White Flag in 2008. At the time, it wasn't called White Flag. So our church is an independent Christian church, and it was a church launched in 1969. And the church basically had kind of gotten into a situation where you hear a lot in church world where they were just struggling leadership, declining attendance. They were just what you would call a church that was floundering for sure. And they wanted to turn that around, and they were ready to change anything, which is a unique situation, because a lot of churches say that, but they don't really mean that. Mm-hmm. And they reached out to me. And so I came in 2008. And, you know, so I've been there about 13 years as the...
Were you at a church before White Flag? What were you doing before?
So, yeah, I had been in ministry. I've been in ministry now for a little over 25 years. So I had been a youth pastor for the first 13 years or so of my career. And the last place I was at was Savannah, Georgia, at a church called Compassion Christian Church.
Okay. All right. Awesome. So kind of tell me how, what the turnaround looked like. I mean, you guys are obviously thriving now and doing awesome things.
It was just really, I felt like God was calling me to help a struggling, dying church. I was at a very large church, a mega church, and, I had opportunities to kind of stay in that lane, but I really felt called to go, to a church that, man, if they just had some leadership and some fresh ideas and some committed leaders that it could turn around. And, by God's grace, the church did that. And so it was really just simply cleaning things up, getting a focused vision, preaching the word of God. And, God wants to grow his church. So it's not really that complicated. And we've seen God certainly grow his church over the last 13 years.
That's awesome, man. So on this podcast, it's called Making Sunday Happen. So we want to talk to, so there's us and other podcasts out there that talk to industry leaders and people, authors and, people who are the experts, so to speak. But one thing I like to do also is really talk to guys in the trenches, is the pastors and worship leaders, tech guys who are in it week in and week out. And so, and that definitely applies to you, especially over the last year, and you guys have kind of taken a little bit of a different approach at White Flag. And so I want to talk through that and just kind of the daily or weekly grind of what you do as a pastor. And also you took a sabbatical last year, right? Kind of in the middle of the crazy, right? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was just really crazy timing. I mean, obviously, none of us were ready for this, pandemic that they have described to us that hit and shut everything down. And so, I'd been doing ministry for 25 years, and I had not taken any kind of really extended break or sabbatical. And I also have always struggled with overworking, everybody's got their issues. Mine has always been, performance issues of like, I think I got to perform for everybody, for God, for people in order to be in a good spot. And, that really just caught up with me after 25 years of ministry. And so I needed and had been planning to take a break, but there was just never a good time because our church is always doing something big and important. And, I finally committed to taking it, and then, COVID hit. And, so I helped navigate the church through the very beginning of that, but then just decided to go ahead and go and leave in the middle of the pandemic, which actually worked out well because things were so weird and everything was being done online that the rest of my staff could carry that. And me being gone was less disruptive, I think, because everything was disrupted.
Right.
But we don't have time to get into how messed up I was. But at the end of the day, I had gotten to a place where I was just so burned out. I was numb spiritually. I didn't have any moral failure or big scandalous thing. I mean, it was just a grind that finally caught up with me. And that sabbatical, I think, literally, saved my ministry. I don't think I would be doing it today if I hadn't taken that. It was a 3-month break, and so God just did amazing things in my life during that time of rest.
So before we dive in deeper to that, tell me how would you describe that to another pastor? What were the warning signs that you didn't see that after you took a break that you're like, man, I didn't realize.
Well, when you start, for me, the key was I started to isolate. I had several factors. We were launching a capital campaign to build a new church building. I built my own home and did it from scratch on raw land, where I cleared the land and, was the general contractor and did the majority of the work, on top of a full-time job and on top of a capital campaign, not to mention I was in my 25th year. So it was kind of like the perfect storm for me. But what happened was I began to isolate. As I was building my house, especially, I found if I could find a way not to be around people, I was happy, or I was at least not, you know, depressed or, you know, irritable. And, you know, looking back, one of the lessons, you know, that God taught me on the sabbatical was, you know, when you start to block out people, you actually block out God. You can't block out people of, you know, in your life and not block out God, because God is relational with us and he wants us to be relational with each other. And so for me, it was all about isolation, and I knew I was numb, and I knew I was feeling, you know, I don't struggle with depression in the, you know, clinical sense. So I tend to be able to go, and I don't get depressed. But even in the go, I just was spiritually numb. I didn't want to preach. I didn't want to pray. I didn't want to read my Bible. I didn't want to invest in any relationships. And so, I mean, those are all obviously terrible warning signs that you need to watch for.
Man. So tell me the sabbatical, what did you do on it, and how did God kind of, you know, revitalize your ministry?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had to just commit what I felt like God was leading me to do. My elders said, look, man, take the 3 months off and we don't want you to do anything. And so, I mean, I planned some purposeful trips with, it was just my wife and I the whole time. And the whole time we traveled, we went all over the place. And, you know, we went to Colorado and California and just went to places where there were big open spaces, and we like to hike and, you know, go see natural beauty and that way. And we went and scheduled a week of intense counseling just to talk about leadership and burnout, for me. And I had my wife go with me. So there were some planned things, but the majority of it was me committing to not working. You know, my struggle isn't that I don't want to work. My struggle is that's all I do. So I tried to make no agenda. Like, I wasn't going to try to read 5 books. I ended up reading 3, but it wasn't because I was trying to complete a list. Mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to pray for 5 hours a day or, you know, do anything like that. For me, it was literally rest. And it took 9 weeks of doing absolutely nothing, which for me is extremely hard, before I felt anything. And it was 9 weeks before I, you know, started to feel like, hey, I feel like reading my Bible, or I feel like, you know, talking about something of importance with my wife, or, you know, 9 weeks, which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. So tell me the kind of the low back half of that. How'd you kind of come out of that and back into ministry?
Well, I mean, we don't have time to get into this, but I felt like for the first time in my life, God really met me, and without sounding crazy, spoke to me in a direct way and kind of met me in my darkest, you know, hour. And I had never experienced anything like that. And, you know, I've been a Christian my whole life. But I also had never been in that desperate of a place. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like God met me. And then it was like immediately I was, you know, recharged and healed and, you know, rejuvenated. But then I had the second half of that sabbatical. And so it was just really nice the way it all worked out. But, you know, coming back, I was just raring to go. And through all that, you know, I had, you know, 3 months of going to church, not being responsible for anything. It was really hard to go to church because most churches everywhere I went were closed. Mm-hmm. So I managed to get to an open church in just about every week, wherever we were at. I think maybe 2 weeks we could not find a church that was open in the region or the area that we were at. But other than that, that was so good just to be able to not be in charge of something.
Right.
And all of that worked to, you know, bring me back and, you know, have me ready to go and not just say I was ready to go, but really feel it. So
what would you say to a pastor who's like, well, I'm not at a place, I haven't done 25 years. I'm not at a place where the leadership's going to give me a sabbatical, but I'm feeling the same things. What would you tell them?
I would tell them to say to their leadership, you know, you either support me in this or you're going to have a bigger problem on your hands. I mean, I don't mean that in a threatening way. I would say that in a heartfelt, humble way. But you know, if you're a pastor that doesn't have resources to be able to do that and doesn't have a leadership team that will support you in that, you know, talk to your pastor friends, because you can get three or four of them to kind of say and speak on your behalf to your elders. A lot of times the elders just don't know that this is what's standard or this is what's needed, and they just need someone to tell them. And so, you know, certainly even if you don't know me, I certainly can, you know, if somebody wants to reach out to me, I can certainly, you know, encourage someone or help someone in that way. But, you know, unfortunately, I know there are churches like that, but I do think that's where you have to kind of put your foot down and say, hey, look, man, I'm dying on the vine here. Yeah. And I'm about to be off the vine, if you will, you know.
Yeah.
And if you do not allow me to do something, you know, we're going to have bigger problems on our hands. And, yeah. I would think if a group of elders would not respond to that properly, well, I mean, then maybe that's not the right place to be at anyway. So yeah.
Good. All right. So you come back and there's a series that I saw from you guys that really struck me. You only did it a couple of weeks, called You Deserve to Know. And this is probably a fair warning sign flag for people that we're going to dive into some politics for a few minutes. And Paul, both you and I are pretty conservative, and text and chat about that quite often. But so this is fair warning, people. So you did this series, and it was some political, and a lot of things were going on in our culture at the time when you came back, and it was kind of a stake in the ground of, hey, this is where our church stands on all these cultural issues, and you deserve to know that so that you can know if this is the right body and fellowship for you. I'm paraphrasing, you, but so you kind of tell me from your angle where that came from.
Yeah. So part of being on the sabbatical was having space to sit back and watch how everybody was responding to the chaos in our world. And, you know, I came back and I did not work on any messages, any sermons. So I was coming back from a 3-month break and I didn't work, you know, the week before I was going back, I didn't prepare anything. So I was committed to, I'm not going to even write my first sermon until I get back into the office, and then I'll have to be ready to go in 4 days or so. And there were two parts to You Deserve to Know. And, you know, anyone can go to our website at White Flag and see these. I wanted to tell everybody what I experienced and what happened on my sabbatical, because, you know, my church provided that for me. So I felt like you guys deserve to know, this is what God taught me spiritually during this break. And then the second part, which had nothing to do with the first part, was, I also think you deserve to know that now that I'm back and now that I've had time to reflect on what's going on in our country, you know, I'm going to draw a line in the sand. You deserve to know what I believe and what our leadership believes about all of these issues. And I fully am aware that you may not agree with them and might even leave our church over it, but you do deserve to know. Who wouldn't want to know that this is what our church is all about and this is what our church believes on these issues? So, you know, I see that as a good thing, even though I realized it might drive some people away. And so that second week was certainly a lightning rod, situation because of the issues that I covered. You know,
what are some of the issues that you covered?
Well, I covered four specific issues. I covered lawlessness, which was addressing all the riots and the responses to the police, and, you know, the defunding the police and the all the anger towards police, and how, you know, every time, unfortunately, there's a crime being committed and someone gets shot, and if that individual is an African-American, how, you know, there's going to be riots, and somehow that justifies the riots, and how everybody jumps to conclusions, you know, 30 seconds after an event, because they saw 15 seconds on a clip online on social media. And, you know, I just addressed that, you know, it's not hard to understand where we should be standing on this issue as a Christian, and spoke directly to this idea of systemic racism, which in my opinion is completely a fabrication and inaccurate. And so I addressed, you know, the facts, which I know not everybody likes. But that was just issue one. In the same sermon, I then talked about race issues, and I addressed BLM and explained how we would be a church that never under any circumstance would support Black Lives Matter as a activist Marxist group that's against the nuclear family. And I explained how they very strategically fooled many people by, you know, a phrase that any normal Christian would agree with, that Black lives do matter. And they use that to kind of hijack people into coming on board to their incredibly dangerous anti-Christian, anti-American, anti-everything, you know, movement that they are about. And so that was an educational piece. But again, stating that we're not going to, you know, be posting anything on social media in support of this because of these obvious reasons. Then I addressed the pandemic, and I just really at that point, it was still pretty early on. And I said, look, you know, this has become political. The facts are not lining up with the narrative. And while we're going to comply in every way to whatever is asked of us, you know, we'll put up plexiglass, we'll put, you know, 6 foot, you know, stickers on the floor, distancing, we'll hand out masks, all those things. But I explained at that point, if they continue to infringe on our freedoms, we will not just roll over and we will have to readdress this issue. Now, it never really came to that, but, you know, I was already seeing the writing on the wall, and we certainly told everyone, look, you know, the narrative that they're painting about this virus is not lining up with science, and we're not going to play into their hands on that. And then the final issue, if those three weren't enough, the final issue I addressed was what I called Trump bashing. Now at our church, we never encourage someone to vote for a certain person. We never back anybody. We never ask anybody who they're voting for. But man, I have just seen the most ridiculous response to, you know, Trump as Christians that I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it's one thing when the world acts a certain way, but when Christians join in on attacking and trying to vilify and, you know, just criticize every move anybody does, that just says more about you than it says about the person you're trying to say is horrible. And somewhere along the line, people started to realize they can send a message, they can virtue signal to everyone how good they are by how venomous they attack Donald Trump. And I just reminded everybody that here's a guy that I don't claim to know anything about where he stands with the Lord, but as a president, you know, he is for protecting children and he's against abortion. He's for Israel. He's doing more for Blacks and Hispanics than any president in the history of our country. I'd say second to Abraham Lincoln. And yet they can't find anything to be thankful for. And so I just kind of informed them, we're not going to be a church that bashes this guy. And we're not going to like create an environment where you feel comfortable bashing this guy. And, you know, with that, I said, you know, you deserve to know. These aren't things we're going to be preaching about every week or talking about every week. It's just, you know, nobody was speaking to these, what I would say were very common sense approaches to, you know, these subjects. And so that was probably way too long, but that was what I was addressing.
No, that's important. So let me ask you an overarching question. Why don't you shy away from talking about politics and political culture?
Well, I mean, I don't want to talk about politics. That's not what God has called me to do. But here's the deal. politics isn't about politics anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, there used to be a day in this country where there were conservatives and liberals. And do you know what those really were definitions for? They were for two different groups of people and how they approached problems from a fiscal responsibility. They either were conservative in their approach or liberal in their approach to solving or governing or budgeting or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And man, our government isn't governing hardly at all. They don't do what used to be done by politicians and government. Now they are coming after moral issues. I mean, who would have thought we would live in a day where, you know, politicians have an opinion on, and even beyond that, are trying to generate laws for, you know, men going into women's bathrooms, you know, sex changes and sports and, you know, race issues. I mean, that stuff should be, you know, talked about in church, you know? And so I am talking about that stuff because they're moral issues. I can't help that the politicians are not doing their job and trying to force their moral values on America.
Right. I agree with you. And I get hit occasionally also too, when, hey, why don't you just stick to the worship experience? Well, I would, but like, if we can't even do Sunday because of these things that are in place, then we can't get to talking about the details. Like, it's important. It's become important to talk about the freedoms that are being infringed on in order to get to the nitty gritty details at this point, sometimes. So,
you know, one thing I'd say also about that is, you know, this notion that Christians are aggressive towards any groups out there. I mean, whatever you pick the subject, you know, the LGBTQ community, whether it's race issues, whether it's, you know, I mean, you take any group. I don't know how people don't see this, but man, those groups are the ones that are attacking. It is not, I do not have a Christian friend who goes up to any of these social justice groups or any of these agenda groups and they try to pick a fight. I mean, or they try to attack or they try to needle them. The idea that Christians are doing that is just a false narrative. These groups are coming at us. We are not going at them. I mean, at least that's none of my friends and the people that I do life with, it would never occur to them to say, hey, there are people that are different than us. Let's go criticize them or pick a fight with them. I mean, it's just, you know, crazy. Right.
So what was the response from the series? Did you have people leave? Did you have people get upset? Did they appreciate it? What was the response?
Well, I mean, I went to the elders and I said, look, I mean,
I'm about to throw down.
Yeah, I'm going to actually give you all of my thoughts and notes in advance because you're going to have to approve this one because, you know, I'm pretty sure this is going to, you know, be a lightning rod. And the reality was I wanted it to be a lightning rod. What I am discovering is, like, I don't want to get down the road and be in a war, figuratively, and not know who's in a foxhole with me, right? I want to know that the people that are in the foxhole with me are with me. And I think a lot of pastors have been surprised going through the last couple of years because they thought, hey, everybody in this room, they're Christians. And of course they believe this. And guess what? That's not the case anymore.
You know, I've been through that, especially the last year, especially on social media with some of the things that you've mentioned, in that maybe it's naive, but I'm like, man, like, really? I thought you were a fellow believer and you don't believe this, or we're not on the same page here.
Right.
Like, and not only that, you're completely the opposite. Like, let's take abortion. I'm like, really? Like, we don't stand together on that one? Like, really? I've just been, I don't know, but I agree. Well, I think some pastors are like,
The mental gymnastics that some people are able to go through, the abortion issue has been just obviously the most frustrating one because there's so much at stake. But you know, you've got these folks who are, you know, Christians who are trying to mentally explain how they mentally went through the gymnastics of saying, well, I voted for this guy because, yeah, I know he's for, you know, abortion to the, you know, latest terms possible. But, you know, this guy over here said a bad word 10 years ago. And I mean, it's, you know, it's clear that like everybody's bad. It's like, really? I mean, like, I'll take the guy cussing, being a womanizer, being, you know, I don't, you know, again, all day long over a moral man who wants to kill babies.
Right. Right.
You know, and by the way, a moral man, I mean, who's moral? I mean, come on, right. You know, yep. But anyway, that will get people all worked up.
Right. Yeah. This one's going to hit. Did you have people leave? Oh. Did you have people get upset?
Well, I really thought we would have a significant amount of people leave, but you know, to my surprise, not only did we not have a significant amount of people leave, in fact, you know, right now we know of maybe three families, you know, in our church that said, hey, this is just not what we believe. And in which we responded, well, I mean, that's why we were sharing it. And
right.
It was
that's
nothing,
okay.
Yeah. And it was nothing bad or dramatic. I assume there's 10 more that I don't know about. Right. But I mean, in a church of thousands, that is not a big number. And what was really surprising is how many people have come to our church as a result of that message. I mean, that message went out and, you know, we're a smaller church. We're not a big, huge mega church. We have somewhat of a presence, but man, you know, our presence went way up and that message got watched and downloaded like, you know, 40,000 times, you know, like that. And we've had people coming in droves. And what's weird is we typically reach lost people who don't have any church background, but we've been now having tons of people come from every denomination around us because they are saying our churches won't speak about this. It's ridiculous. And we heard that your church is addressing it. And I mean, literally they've just come in droves and that's not normally our market because we're not trying to get other Christians from other churches, you know, but it has happened, unfortunately, because there are a lot of churches that won't touch these subjects with a 10-foot pole. I mean, they just won't.
Why not? And maybe the bigger question is why is it important that we fight the culture war in the church?
I think most people are afraid. I mean, the model is if you say something, we're going to come after you and we're going to destroy you. And there are some people, I mean, I'm wired to be, you know, I'm an 8 on the Enneagram. If any of your listeners know what that is, they'll know exactly kind of what kind of person I am. I'm a hill taker. I'm a fighter. I'm aggressive. That's the nice way to say it. Some people would say, you know, I'm blunt. I'm a bull in a china shop. I mean, there's negative sides to that too, but I do think it's a personality thing. I don't think everybody wants to fight. And I'm trying to encourage people to start fighting because if we don't all get on the same page, we're not going to just lose America. I mean, we probably already lost America, to be quite honest, in my opinion. But we're going to quickly lose the church. And, you know, if we lose the church, you know, there's certainly no chance for America or the redeeming of America. So, you know, I hope that they'll speak up and start speaking up, but I'm not convinced that, you know, every Christian or believer even agrees with what we're talking about. That's what's right. So crazy.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. So do you feel like there's this kind of wheat and tares thing happening over the last year that we're kind of weeding out those who.
Yeah. I mean, again, you know,
for lack of a better.
There's part of me that says, how arrogant is it for me to think, well, we're the ones
correct.
That have it right and everybody
right.
else is wrong. But again, if you think of it this way, like if my father, who was a pastor for 50 years plus six, I don't know how long time, you know, came back to life. He died 8 years ago. And so if he came back and we had to explain to him, So here's the deal. You know, now there's a debate about men getting sex changes and playing in women's sports. It's bad to protect our borders and make people, you know, wait in line like it's always been. You know, not all Christians think abortion is bad. I mean, if we started going down the list, oh, hey, Dad, so there's a new debate. All police should be done away with because all of them are racist. They all go around looking to try to find an African-American to shoot because that's all they want to do. I mean, the narrative that people believe now, again, someone like my father 8 years ago would go, wait a minute, his head would explode. Mm-hmm. But somehow people have been bullied into believing this. That's probably a great way to say it. People have been bullied into believing it, accepting it, and championing it, which is the danger. It's just nuts.
Hey guys, I wanted to let you know about a brand new project that we're a part of. We have teamed up with NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters, to bring you a 10-class course called Church Media Masterclass. This course will give you practical training as a church tech and communicator and feature incredible content from my friend Phil Cook, yours truly, Dan Darling from NRB, Stephen Brewster, Mark McDonald, Brad Weston from ProPresenter, Nate Anderson from Resi, Jeff Reed from Stadia Church Planning, Josh Brown from His Productions, our creative director Sean Reese, and more. This is conference level content for an extremely low price. I'm talking under $10 per class. Register for the Church Media Masterclass today at churchmediamasterclass.com. That's churchmediamasterclass.com.
The show notes for this episode are available now at makingsundayhappen.com.
Guys, you'll want to sign up for the Church Media Masterclass. It was a blast being part of that project. It's less than $10 per class, and each course is going to teach you practical content on the state of media in the church. We're going to give you tools for church online, tips for live streaming, tips for ProPresenter, and more. ChurchMediaMasterclass.com. Great deal there for church tech leaders. Again, less than $10 per class. Great, great content. All right, I want to give you a little sneak peek on what's to come over the next few weeks on our podcast. Next week, we will continue our conversation with Paul Wingfield. We'll wrap that conversation up next week. And then in 2 weeks, I'll be welcoming the leadership of the National Religious Broadcasters staff to the show. My friends Troy Miller, who is the CEO of NRB. Also Dan Darling, who is the communications director. And Beth Wakefield. She is the director of Convention and Expo and also a longtime friend of mine. All three of these folks are all in one jam-packed episode. And for episode number 300, you know, on the big milestone episodes, we like to try for a big, big guest. And 300 is no exception. I will welcome Phil Joel from the Newsboys. You know him as the long hair blonde that's been with the Newsboys a long time. He left the Newsboys a few years ago and went and started Zealand, the band Zealand, and has been leading worship. But over the last few years, he's been back with Newsboys for Newsboys United and the tour and all that. So we're going to talk about all that. We're going to walk through his career, and we're going to talk about worship and a lot more. So Phil Joel from the Newsboys, episode 300, coming up in just a few weeks. I have the interview with Phil already in the can, and we had a blast walking through his career with Newsboys and Zealand and talked about the heart of worship and more. I can't wait to share that with you. All right, our blog and podcast is completely free, along with super affordable books on our website, 1230.media/training. Again, that's 1230.media/training for all of that. Well, thank you guys so much for hanging out. Go out there and create some incredible worship experiences this weekend at your church. I'll catch you next week.
Making Sunday Happen is a production of the Ministry of 1230 Media. For show notes, archive episodes, and more free resources for your church, visit MakingSundayHappen.com.